think it's fair to say I'm a pretty lucky guy. I run a startup that's doing really well. I have a YouTube channel that people watch for some reason. I get to work on stuff that I genuinely love every day. I can't complain. That said, I think you can be lucky too. People seem to think luck is just this thing that happens to you, but it's not. Luck is a function of different things. It's opportunity plus prep to an extent. But it's also a thing that you can increase the surface area for. Luck is a thing that occurs, not a thing that you have. And you can increase the surface area for your luck by thinking more carefully about what you're doing and where you spend your time. I'm not saying to go buy some scratch tickets. I'm saying to think more deliberately about how you position yourself in an ever-changing market for engineering. And I'm certainly not saying you should go make a YouTube channel either. If you really want to, you can, but there's a lot of better strategies to position yourself well in this market as it changes. And while I might not be the perfect shape for this modern AI developer world, there are a lot of things that have helped me with my positioning so that I can kind of luck into the right place at the right time. But what does that mean? How can you position yourself to be luckier with these types of opportunities? How can you bet on luck a little bit more? I have a feeling this article is going to say some really good stuff about that, and I have my own thoughts too. Thankfully, I'm lucky enough to have sponsors covering the bills so I can give these videos out for free. So let's hear from one of them quick, and then we'll get started. It's so easy to set up Auth yourself nowadays. Just go through the 50 different packages you could possibly use, hopefully pick the right one, get it added to your application, set up the database, make sure the scheme is perfect. If it's not, you're screwed. Go through the different OAuth providers and make sure you hit every checkbox the exact way you need to. You get the right key in the right place. Good luck making your dev environments work, especially when you're trying to do preview builds. Oh, and then another company hits you up and they want to make sure it supports Okta for the SSO. Okay, Auth is easy until it isn't. And that's what today's sponsor is here to help out with. WorkOS knows their stuff for enterprise Auth. Setting up Auth for your side projects is easy enough. I'm not going to pretend otherwise. But as soon as you need to make it work for real customers, like big businesses with tons of different Auth providers and SSO systems, good luck. Have fun. I've been there. It's not fun. We can't onboard enterprise customers for T3 chat because we don't have the stuff they need, which is why we're looking into moving to WorkOS and why you should probably start with them. If you're trying to land enterprise customers, this admin portal is going to make your life significantly easier. You just send the link to the team you're trying to onboard. They pick whichever of the many different providers they might be using, and then things are set up. It's that easy. Do you know how miserable it is to do this stuff yourself? I've been there. It's not fun. These guys deeply understand DX too. It's a bunch of huge TypeScript nerds that have been fans of the channel and part of this community for as long as I've been doing this stuff. I love the team at WorkOS. You can take my word for it or look at the absurd list of companies that have also made the move, including OpenAI, Cursor, Vercel, Carta, Fal, SourceGraph, Plaid, Perplexity, so many more. And there are new ones every day too. By the way, first 1 million users are free. What do you have to lose? Check them out today at soydev.link/workOS. So thank you, Kate, for writing this. She also has a book coming, so definitely keep an eye on that. I'll have links for all of this in the description. One distinguishing feature I've noticed among people who are unusually successful is that they just try a lot of stuff, socially, intellectually, professionally, etc. It's the rate of experimentation, the number of shots on goal, that provides the magic, not the percentage of success, which might be very low at first. Not just at first, it stays low. Like, we need to be real about that. People like Levels.io still have 70%+ of their projects just fail outright. You're not expected to be really successful with everything you build when you build a lot of different things, even if you've had a couple huge successes. Like with my own business, we had so many different failures. I talked about this in depth in my startups video where I talk about the history of my stuff, but we built a lot of different things. We built ping.gg, which it didn't like fail in the sense that it just blew up and died or got no users, but it capped really early. So much so that I had to like lay off most of the team, which was one of the saddest and hardest things I've ever had to do. Then we did webhook thing, which nobody cared. Okay, we had a couple of people who really cared, and I loved those users, but it just wasn't a thing that could possibly become a real business. We started building other creator tools on the side. The original version of Pick Thing was around here, gave up halfway, pivoted, because when we were building Pick Thing, we realized Upload Thing would be a really good product to build because it was the slowest part of building Pick Thing, which looked like it was doing good. It got a lot of adoption. People install the packages a ton. They abuse our free tier, but it doesn't make any fucking money. Then actually ship Pick Thing. But obviously we had others along the way. Marker Thing, which I think was technically before actually building Pick Thing. We had other like features we built into Ping that were their own products, but we built so many of these things that just kind of failed outright before building the one that worked. And it was not the one I expected to have work. I did not think T3 chat, of all of the things in this list, would be the one to actually make money and be successful. And at the time, I would tell people, I'm like, why would you build a chat app right now? That's stupid. And now it seems obvious. Like, of course you build a chat app. It's an easy way to make money. But it was not obvious at all when we did it. The reason we got there wasn't even because we thought it could blow up. I was trying to build more of these small to medium projects that would keep the business afloat so that Ping wouldn't run out of money and die. And it turns out by building a bunch of these different things in hopes that a few would make a couple $1,000s a month, this one ended up making us profitable within a month. Never would have imagined that would be the case. But the point here is that I had to build a bunch of things to have the lucky draw. And this wasn't like, I'm a genius for coming up with this idea. It was the opposite. It's, this is stupid, but I want it bad enough. I'm just going to do it and see what happens. And what happened was way bigger than I ever would have imagined. But I guarantee we'll be building more things over time. And the other ones will probably suck too. Not that they're bad. I would argue Upload Things a better product than T3 Chat, and that Ping's arguably a better product than all of them in terms of how good they are compared to the other options in the market. But it's not just how good you are at doing the thing. It's not just good how good the thing is. There are lots of other aspects, and those other aspects are luck. Somebody asked, do I think this is because I stopped building for devs? Who the fuck do you think Ping was for? Who do you think Pick Things for? What do you think Marker Things for? I built for devs twice. These are the only two products I ever built for devs. The point I'm trying to make here is that the success was things I don't even fully understand. It's some level of people wanting access to all of the models from the same place for cheap. It's some amount that our app's actually quite good. Some amount the fact that I'm popular and can put it in front of people. But it's also luck. And it's foolish to think otherwise. I didn't have some genius realization or make some incredible decision that led to T3 Chat being so successful. I got lucky, but I got lucky after getting unlucky working harder on other things for years. And I expect to do other things that will suck and not be as popular as well too. Anybody who thinks this is as simple as, oh, you have a, it has a larger audience. No, it's not that simple. None of this is that simple. If you think it's that simple, you're kidding yourself and you're not going to get the lesson that we're here to learn. The lesson we're here to learn is that you have to try a bunch of different shit because there is no simple, obvious reason that successful things are successful. Success doesn't come from a lot of wisdom and foresight and genius. Success comes from the willingness to try and fail over and over again. The analogy I often give with this is skateboarding. It's funny because people don't consider skaters lucky because it's so obvious what they're doing. If a skater is trying to land a hard trick, it's obvious they won't land it first try. We know that. They're going to bail and get up and try over and over again. And the hardest tricks ever done in skateboarding took months, if not years, for the skater to do. But our response to that isn't, oh, wow, he's so lucky he landed that. It's, wow, he must have had so much wherewithal to go through all of those failures in order to land that thing. And I learned this myself from skating when I was young. I didn't learn tricks by sitting at home and watching videos and reading books about how skateboards work. I got good at skating by getting hurt over and over again, by hitting the ground so many times that I have to have my left hand reconstructed in a few weeks. But that's how I got good. It wasn't luck. But because people don't see those failures in other places, like in the software dev world, people assume it's luck. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten messages like, T3 Chat is only popular because you're a famous person. You got so lucky, man. Not fair. I can't compete. I've seen so much of this type of sentiment. Never from people who use T3 Chat, funny enough, because once they use it, they actually get it. I've also had a lot of haters try T3 Chat because they wanted to make fun of it and then unblock me and apologize publicly for making fun of me because it turns out I can build decent shit. Speaking of which, if you want access to literally every relevant AI model in one app that is really nice to use for $8 a month, I'll give you the first month for $1 instead. I just put up a new promo code, DECENT, that you can use during checkout on a new account in order to get 1 month for $1. That's every model for $1. That's a pretty good deal if I do say so myself. I would be so lucky if you were to go subscribe. Anyways, back to the article. It sounds stupidly simple, but it's profound. The more times you interact with the outside world, the more chances you have to get lucky, to find the collaborators, friends, and projects that, together, provide the right soil for you to bloom in. I want to dig into this as well. So let's say you have something that you're going to build, and there's a 99% chance you're going to fail, and a 1% chance you're going to succeed. If you roll that 10 times, the chances get a lot better, because it's 0.99, which is the chance of failure, to the power of 10, and then 1 minus that, it's now a 9.5% chance you've succeeded just by doing it 10 times. But what if, hear me out, that fail chance isn't just a failure. What if the failures actually teach you something or get you some benefit? What if when you fail, you make a new friend around the thing that you're building that can help you out in the future? What if you have some new insight or learning that makes it so you're going to do better products in the future? What if you realize the whole market that you were building in is cursed and terrible, so you never do it again or ever have the expectations things will do well in the creator space? I have so many thoughts there. The point here being that a failure isn't just a failure, it's a learning opportunity. So not only does each failure increase your chance of success because of the basic statistics of running the thing over and over, every additional run by itself has an increase of the chance of success too. Maybe you double the chance of success because you learned so many things that were causing failures in the past. Maybe you don't. But chances are you're going to get better some amount and learn things that are useful and make connections that are useful and increase the likelihood that you end up lucky. And this works for everything. You talk to more investors, you're more likely to get one to say yes. If you build more side projects, you're more likely to make one that's actually good. If you try multiple solutions to a problem, you're more likely to find one that's really solid. If you talk to more people, you're more likely to make friends in the spaces that you're interested in and have these connections that are really useful. But there's one other piece here that I've been talking more and more about, which is the value of the people around you. It's the same reason that I'm in favor of telling people to go to college still. It's the same reason that I encourage you optimize your career early on around working with good teams. The people around you massively compound the luck surface area. This is a big deal. I got into some trouble a long time ago for this take, but I think I can phrase it properly here now. I had someone who got really mad at me at a Twitter space because I was only successful because I went to college and I had all these connections, and that's why I was able to get the job and then go make a startup. And since I'm lucky enough to not have a family with bills to pay, to have this history, to have these connections, I'm permitted to make a startup. But since they don't have that, they can't make a startup, and that's not fair. That much is true to an extent. It is unfair that they don't have a good enough surface area of luck to have any real chance at doing a startup. But you have to find a balance there. If you don't have enough surface area of things to increase the likelihood that you succeed, because I had the surface area of like my college friends, I had the surface area of my rich ex-Twitch coworkers, I had the surface area of having low expenses, single, no kids, etc. I had the surface area of lots of money in bank after job. And these things gave me a large space to be lucky in. And that is a privilege to an extent. I'm not pretending it's not. Like, these are things that I'm lucky enough to have had my life go in the way where I can have these things. And on top of this, I can take a lot of risks. Because I have so much surface area here, I can build the thing, have it collapse because it fails, and that's fine. And then I just move on and do the next one. Maybe that fails. Keep going over and over again until eventually one succeeds beyond my wildest imagination. But I have to like earn that. That's not a thing that I just get because I have this. It means I can go way further until I run out of like runway to try out new things. But if you don't have the runway, the solution is not to complain about not having the runway. It's do things to build more of it. If your runway is determined on the surface area that you have, you can build it other ways. If you don't have these types of friends, go get a job where you can make them. Does it suck that you have to work for 4 years to get yourself into a position similar to me? Sure, but I had to work for 5 years for it, so it's not that big a difference. And if you're not qualified enough to get the job, why do you think you're going to luck it out in the startup world building something new from scratch? Like, we're all making bets here. That's how all of this works. You need to do everything you can to increase the likelihood that your bet can succeed. And a huge part of that is building up the surface area. So if you don't have this, like if you're a college dropout or you're stuck paying for a family and kids, or you have huge health issues that are making it hard for you to grind all day, it sucks, but the startup life probably isn't something you should be aspiring to do right now. You should be doing other things first. If your surface area is like this and you get to make the bet once and it fails, which it will because nobody gets it right the first try, now you're screwed. And now you have nothing to fall back on. You have no extra space that you can use to recover with. So what you need to do first is increase this surface. And that could be things like, I don't know, getting a decent job with a cool team. That'll be a huge help. You can pull that off. You're going to start making a lot of connections that are really useful. Maybe you start talking to people in the startup world and you make friends who run startups. Maybe you go to a coding boot camp and network with your peers a bunch. Maybe you save a bunch of money so you can safely coast for 6 months. You have to make the surface if you don't have it already. And you make the surface by doing different things. If you don't have the foundation that someone like I have, you don't get to skip those steps. You don't have to do it the same way I did, but you have to have enough range to make these mistakes. Even if you think you're way smarter than me and that it's unfair that my dumb ass can make a successful startup and your really, really smart, hardworking self can't, for me, it's a 1% chance. Maybe for you, it's a 2%. You're still going to die if you have one role. You need to increase the number of opportunities that you have to have the thing work. It seems like this is where the article's going, and I'm really hopeful it is. Thank you again, Kate, for writing this and getting me to go on this rant. People who move slowly through life tend to get fewer shots on goal and have longer feedback loops. Perhaps they work privately on creative projects that they don't show to anybody for months or years, or they stay in a relatively contained peer group for a long time without mixing it up. Peers is a really big thing. You need to be surrounded with people who are like-minded that are pushing themselves to do better. If everybody around you is stagnant or everybody around you isn't doing similar stuff to what you want to do, you don't know if you're making progress or not. You have to pace yourself with the people around you. One of the best tricks for running long distances is to have somebody that you can pace yourself with. The crazy marathon runners who run like 5 marathons have people running with them for most of it. Not somebody running with them for the whole length, but they swap out the pacers so that they can focus on the hard thing of running, not making sure their speed is perfect. You need to have peers to keep pace. This is why I push college so hard. If you're in high school and you're watching these videos, I have questions, but the thing I'm going to emphasize is go to college. It's okay if you drop out. It's okay if you don't get the fancy paper at the end. The point of college isn't that you're qualified to have a real job, is that you're surrounded with peers that you can pace yourself against and try to do better than learn from and improve yourself as you go. And also just get way better at talking with your peers and making these connections that will benefit you hugely in the future. Most of my first investors are people I met from college that had done well enough outside of college, and also people that I knew from my first job. That's how I raised enough money to quit my job and make my startup. And then because of connections from all of that and the excitement those people had for me, I couldn't get into some of the like easier to get into startup accelerators. So I applied to multiple and got rejected immediately. And then I got into the hard one, YC. It's the surface area of luck just happened to get me to the right place at the right time. And enough people had mentioned me to the right people at YC that it all happened super quickly and better than I ever would have imagined. And then I failed for 4 years. That's how it goes. But go to college, make these connections, optimize for making the right friends and surrounding yourself with people that aren't going to slow down so that you don't slow down unknowingly or go in the wrong direction. If you're surrounded with other people who are also trying to get better at programming, get better jobs, make cool things, and do cool stuff, you're going to stay motivated. But if you're surrounded with people that are blaming the world for their circumstances or just aren't really improving at the work that they do every day or been in the same code base for 8 years just shipping crappy Rails code and never making new features, those are not the people you want to be surrounded with. Optimize for the type of agility that you want to have in your own life. It massively increases the likelihood that you have these lucky breaks and meet these awesome people later on. Like, it's a silly example, but I used to be in some stupid Facebook groups about hacking stuff when I was in college, just people talking about hackathons and programming, occasional actual hacking stuff too. Just a group of nerdy people. I made some close friends through that group, one of which had a really close friend from college who was super close with Sorek, the guy who created Cydia. That's now a good friend of mine. That dude's talked me through some rough shit. He has meaningfully extended my luck surface area by keeping me fucking alive when shit hits the fan. And I wouldn't have met him if I wasn't shitposting in those stupid Facebook groups before I was a relevant person. The fact that this like hero of mine, the guy who made Cydia, that made jailbreaking like a thing that was worth doing, became a friend of mine through 2 mutual connections, like multiple steps away from me, because I happened to be in this Facebook group surrounded with devs that I could nerd out with, was just a massive example of like luck. That was an incredibly lucky thing that happened to me, but that happened because I had embedded myself in the places where that type of luck can happen. This is also why you should live in San Francisco, but I don't want to go down that rant just yet. If someone's trying to figure out what to do with their life and they're meeting with 1 to 2 interesting strangers a day, then all things being equal, I'm inclined to bet on them. They're meeting 1 to 2 people a week, I'm inclined to think they're going too slowly and aren't going to hit escape velocity. Absolutely agree. And this idea that like you have to be moving fast enough to make it happen, we could do the numbers on this, but if we just stick with the 99% to 1% example here, 99% fail, 1% success. And let's say somebody is doing this 2x a day and someone else is doing it 2x a week. Once you've went through this around 70 times, there is a 0.505 chance, like a 50+% chance, 50.5% chance, you have hit success. You do this 70 times, you have a 50% chance that you've hit success. So if you do this 2 times a day, that takes 45 days to have this lucky thing happen to you. If you do it 2 times a week, that's 45 weeks. That's 315 days. That's an absurd difference. If there's a 1% chance that one of these things goes well for you, you do it twice a day, you'll get there in 2 months. If you do it twice a week, you'll probably get there within a year. Probably. Well, let's be real. You're not doing it 2x a week. If you're doing it 2x a week, you're doing it 2x a week most weeks, but some weeks you just take the week off because you're busy. Some weeks you miss the deadline. Sometimes there's 10 days between each opportunity. This is going to take you over a year. The more you try, the more likely you are to win. And trying isn't just building new shit constantly. Like if you're putting out a crazy new app every day. So I did 45 out of 35. Math is hard, okay? Don't make fun of me for my math. If I do enough math, I'll eventually get lucky, okay? You get the idea here. You should be doing shit more. And that's not like build a new app every day. That's make the right connections and talk to the right people, go to the right events, spend time in the right circles to be more likely to get these insights and make these connections and learn these things. So what are the most efficient ways? Oh, this is a very convenient thing for us to move to. How do you figure out who these key people are and ensure that you meet them? This is something that you can't really undertake with that kind of, oh my God, I love this article. I so hard agree on this. This is touching on so many things I try to embed in half my fucking content. This idea that like, you don't solve this problem by making a bullet point list of how to get luckier. You solve this problem by fucking rethinking your mindset and attitude entirely. My video about not contributing to open source goes really in depth on this. If your goal is to use open source to get a job, you have so many fundamental misunderstandings that I don't know if I can help you. Open source doesn't magically get you a job because you contributed the right README to the right fucking repo. That's not how the world works. Open source makes you more valuable as a potential hire because if you're a good dev, you end up contributing to open source because you're using open source things, finding problems and doing it. It's a cart before the horse. The problem here is, oh, should I draw a horse and a cart? This will be fun. Here's my very realistic horse, and here's my beautiful cart. The point of the cart before the horse is that the horse has to pull the cart. Like, duh, that's how this analogy is supposed to work. Horse goes forward, cart goes with it. Duh, obvious. Next question. Okay, but actually, the reason I'm bringing this up is if there is a developer that is good, so if the horse is a good dev, something that happens with good devs that are doing a lot of work is they fix things in open source. In this case, an open source contribution shows their deep understanding of the thing, the fact that they're building real things with it, real enough to run into problems, and they have enough like initiative, they have enough drive to go solve it. That's why open source is a good measure for this type of person, because if someone's good, they have done that. But if someone was to pretend that if they fix something in open source, or they contribute open source, because that's what it actually is, they're not fixing things in open source, they're contributing to open source, thinking that will get them a job. I can't tell you how many times I see this. People think that if they contribute to open source, they will get a job. Or if they get accepted into Y Combinator, they'll have a successful startup. Or if they were popular on YouTube, they would have a successful product. That's actually a really common one. Popular on YouTube and Twitter. And then they think people care about what you do. This is a very common one. People think that if you're popular, suddenly people care about what you do. As someone who occasionally posts about music on my Twitter account that's mostly tech, I promise you, being popular does not mean people care about what the fuck that I do. It does not work that way. People care about what I do, therefore, I am now popular on Twitter and YouTube because I made it worth caring about the stuff that I do. You need to realize there's an order to these things. And if you're approaching this with, if I was lucky, I would be famous, or if I was lucky, I would be successful, or if I was lucky, I wouldn't have to work so hard, you're fucked. It's just incorrect order of events. And as Kate's saying here, if your goal here is to just like hit the minimum number of people you have to meet to have a successful business, you're doing this entirely wrong. You need to have the right mindset to be successful. That mindset will make your surface area for luck bigger, will make it so you learn better from your failures, and it will set you up for success long term. It will give you all the things that we're talking about here, but the thing that matters isn't that you take a list of all of the stuff that we say here that will make your surface area bigger, it's that you think in a way that brings you there more effectively. But what matters here is how you think, not what you do and how you hit the bullets on this bullet point list. As Kate says, some goals have to be approached like gardening. You can't force plants to grow. You can only engineer the conditions in which they're likely to flourish and trust that results will come. Making your own luck is like this. As Steve Jobs put it, you can't plan to meet the people who will change your life. Yes, absolutely. There is no world in which I would have planned to meet Sorek at my friend's birthday party in the middle of nowhere in San Francisco. That is not how I would have met somebody that's really important to me. I met him because I was just hanging out with my friends that were peers doing like-minded things, which resulted in me meeting somebody that I care a lot about. These things happen because of the people I choose to be around. That's how that goes. You can still increase your skill at being lucky, though. Much how skilled gardeners tend to produce lush gardens, skilled cultivators of luck tend to randomly accrue dense interpersonal networks. So what does skilled luck cultivation look like? I'm actually excited about this part because I feel like I'm good at this, but I don't actually understand how. I'm regularly told by people that it's weird that I seem to know everyone, but it's just because I reach out when I think what they're doing is interesting. I'm curious how Kate puts this because I want to know how to explain this to others better, myself. Operate from a place of genuine curiosity. Talking to people without an end in mind other than satisfying your own curiosity is the slow way that is the fast way. Ooh, I love this. I don't hit people up asking for... God, if you listen to everything I'm saying here and you think the solution is to go hit up random people asking for a job, stop fucking watching my videos. You have learned all of the wrong lessons from this. You're not trying to luck into the right opportunity. You're trying to make the right connections to make you lucky long term. If you have an interesting question about something I've talked about that you care a lot about, that you know I care a lot about, hit me up. I probably won't respond because my DMs suck, but I might. You might be surprised. If you think I need help finding engineers, you're fucking delusional. But if you see one of my thumbnails that isn't quite ideal and you download it, make some changes and say, hey, Theo, I think this video would perform better if the thumbnail was a bit more like this. I'm curious what you think or if you had a reason for doing it that way. You're going to almost certainly get a response from me. If you hit up Ryan Carniato asking for a job at Sentry, he's not going to respond. But if you hit up Ryan Carniato asking a deep, insightful question about a post that he wrote, he's probably going to do a rant about it in his next stream. Approach with curiosity, with the goal to actually learn something, not to take something. Don't hit me up because you want something from me. Hit me up because you're curious about something I'm also curious about. Literally taking the words out of my mouth, Kate. I fucking love this article. People love to talk about what they're interested in, and by extension, love to talk to people who are genuinely curious about the things that they're interested in. I say this all the time. Oh, that's so good. Thank you for putting this here. If you hit up somebody because they're interested in something you're interested in, and they don't respond or they respond negatively, you probably misjudge their interest or they're putting on a front. And that almost never happens. That almost never happens. If you can hit somebody up about something that you're equally excited about, you're probably going to make a friend out of it. And I've made friends with people that I shouldn't even have the possibility of talking to about this. Like, I'm friends with Sasha Gray because of weird audio stuff. We're just nerds about speakers and gear. I'm friends with Luke from LTT because we used to talk about phones before I was even a YouTuber. I'm friends with a bunch of YouTubers who recently blew up because I DM'd them when I thought their videos were cool and they were nobodies and just wanted to like offer my help with certain things with their audio. It's so easy to do when you share an interest. And if you're struggling to do this, you're probably struggling to have that interest. After a dozen inquisitive conversations with people in a given field, you will already have the beginnings of a good network, as well as lots of knowledge that you could never accrue in formal learning settings. Talk to a dozen engineers working in AI labs, and you'll know more about what's happening at the frontier of AI dev than you could garner from a million think pieces or tweets, or even my videos. That said, it's part of what I'm trying to capture here. I'm trying to make this more conversational. Like you're overhearing a conversation that would occur at dinner at some tech company. I want this to be a back and forth. That's why I keep chat open on my monitor there so I can always see how people feel and to do this back and forth. Remember that at any time, the latest information in a field won't be written down. Whew, so many bangers. Of course, not all conversations will be helpful. Some meetings will be wastes of time. There's really no way to know in advance whether someone will be fun to talk to or helpful or informative. But also, the conversations that aren't helpful or informative or fun could end up being some huge benefit for you down the line if they remember you as the person who's good at that thing. When I look back on the meetings that have been the most professionally consequential for me, nearly every one of them I almost bailed on because I was busy or feeling shy or there wasn't an obvious benefit to having the conversation. This is an important point and the recurring theme throughout these tips. If you're withholding your energy for use only in those situations where you know an interaction will benefit you, you're not increasing your surface area for luck at all. You're already failing at the assignment. Yeah, like if you're only hitting me up because you're hoping to get a job out of me, you're fucked. If you're only hitting people up because there's an expected transaction to occur, you're fucking up. Assume you're always auditioning for a bigger role. So many gems in this. Imagine that you were the chef of a Michelin-starred restaurant and, for some reason, you were assigned a shift as a regular brunch cook. You'd probably perform unusually well, beyond the level that could be expected of a regular cook. Maybe there wouldn't be anything categorically different from what an average brunch cook would do, There would just be an increase in caring because to perform anything less than excellent would be embarrassing for you. The winning move here is to start behaving like that chef when you're just a cook, to assume that you're aiming for a future that will hold you to a much higher standard, even if you're not currently held to that standard. People who behave like this, who act as if they are already admired and successful in their field, have a funny way of ending up there somehow. Whew, so many bangers. When I got asked to pitch in on some legal research on clinical trials over the holidays in 2021, I didn't have much reason to believe it would turn into anything special. It was Christmas, I wasn't being paid for it, could have easily half-assed it and no one would have blinked. But instead I treated it as important, as if performing less than excellently would be embarrassing. And it led in quick succession to an offer to lead the clinical trial effort and then to co-found a company. I have a silly, similar anecdote here. As you guys could probably guess, I'm often asked to talk at colleges. And we need to be realistic. I almost always say no. There are exceptions though. And I want to talk about one of them that just immediately came to mind. I was at Open Sauce last weekend. When I was at Open Sauce, I talked to a lot of different people. Many were creators who I've looked up to forever. Like I sat with Tom Scott for fucking 3+ hours. It was great. But some of them were people who I didn't know that snuck into some of the like after parties and things that recognized me. They were there because they're in the Bay and they work on startups. They were trying to get my attention. Somebody in chat already predicted what's about to happen. I talked to a student at OpenSauce and they asked on the spot, will you do a short talk at my school? I said what I always say, no, I'm too busy. To which they replied, I know, but I also know you like Waterloo students a lot. And this, it's stupid, but they lucked out really hard here because they've watched enough of my content and heard enough of my rants to know that I have never made a bad hire or investment from a Waterloo student. And I want to keep increasing my surface area there. I want more and more Waterloo students to know who I am so that it's more likely that I find success from them. So I ended up saying yes. They got lucky here because they had exposed themselves to enough of my content to increase their surface area to get me to say yes. And I am increasing my service area for luck because I want more Waterloo students to know who I am and associate me with a path to success so that I can take advantage of that in the future. And they might come to me when they want to raise money or get jobs in different places that are like relevant to what I do. A student passed the lore check. That's another fun way of thinking of it. Absolutely. Also, Krish is another great example. Krish is a fun example because him and I go really hard during Advent of Code. I love Advent of Code. It's a programming challenge that occurs every December where a new problem comes out at 9 p.m. PST and we all have to hack on it as fast as we can to get a leaderboard time. I love this challenge, not because I learn a whole bunch from it. I learn a decent bit every year, but the community aspect is so fun and I find these awesome people through it. Last year, I wasn't going to do it because I was too busy, but I decided to anyways. And I ended up getting some really good leaderboard times and making some new friends. The year before, someone popped up on my leaderboard named Krish. He was already kind of part of my community. He's in my Twitch chat right now. Krish killed it. Him and I were back to back regularly fighting for the number one spot. And this person who was previously, no offense, Krish, just another chatter hanging out on Twitch stream with me, now is a moderator in my Twitch chat, a person I talk to regularly. I had to bully him to hang out with me when he finally came to SF and also got me to record a talk for him and his college. That's because him and I both decided to do Advent of Code. We impressed each other, got closer through that, and he massively increased the likelihood that he finds success in the industry through me by doing that, just by doing the stupid programming challenge. It's a waste of time. It's silly, and he's tired of being exposed, but I'm trying to make this point is these types of things increase your surface area. The lesson here isn't that every excess outlay of effort pays dividends immediately. It's that people really notice when you show up, despite it not being a matter of duty or obviously in your self-interest, and people remember it. I have another silly example because there are so many of these. I put too much effort into a lot of projects. Like the One App Five Stacks project I did somewhat recently, that was way too much effort. And I got basically fucking nothing for it. Thankful for the sponsors that made it financially viable, but like the extra effort we put in there got us nothing. But then Snitch Bench was something that I cared a lot about because I was mad about the misinformation spreading about the new Anthropic models because people didn't actually read the system card they were screenshotting and bitching about. And it just frustrated me to see that misinformation. I recorded the video for this 4 times and I threw out the first 3. I did this video many times because I cared a lot about it. And every time I did it, I was pretty happy with and proud of the video. But then I realized I could make it clearer and more concise and make the thing I was testing better. And then one night I was lying in bed and just couldn't stop thinking about the right way to build the actual bench. Because the first three times I did this, I had literally just copy-pasted a prompt that would possibly make it flag and added a couple tool calls hard-coded into an open source AI chat app and was by hand running each test. But I realized I could automate all of this. Like, obviously I could, but I thought of like what it would look like technically to do that, how I could add multiple steps and revisions throughout it, how I could analyze the results, and realized this would be fun to build. The video is not going to do any better. Like, if I had put out one of the first three videos, it probably would have performed as good, if not better, than the one I ended up doing instead. But I wanted to do this. I nerd sniped myself into spending way too much fucking time on Snitch Bench. And I did. And I made a benchmark that has paid its way in dividends so many times. The fact that the benchmark is now more relevant than the video is weird, because normally the things I do are relevant because of the video, not the other way. Snitch Bench is relevant because it's a good benchmark. And I didn't think it was when I made it. I didn't realize it until Simon fucking Willison wrote a post about it. And now Simon and Theo are friends. I am so lucky to call Simon a friend. He is the fucking best. He's the guy who created Django. He has an incredible blog about AI stuff. And apparently he has been nerding out about my benchmark constantly. It's one of his favorite things to bring up in conversation with others. And that's why I got to meet him, because when I brought it up with somebody, they're like, oh, Snitch Bench. I was just talking with Simon about that. You should meet him. The list of people who told me to meet him includes, but is not limited to, Joshua, the creator of Delicious. If you know, you know. Tom Scott. You know Tom Scott. Multiple OpenAI employees. And a bunch of other just like random mutuals have been telling me for a while, since I did Snitch Bench, that I need to meet Simon. And when the time finally came and we got to meet, we did. And it was awesome. He's great. And by doing something like he did, and this is the fun twist, Simon, by doing this, increased his surface area for luck too. This is the thing that I'm pretty sure he'll be cool with me sharing. Simon doesn't take any money for his work right now. His blog doesn't make him jack fucking shit. I didn't realize how little, sorry, not little, basically zero money he was making on that. And he doesn't know how to like figure out the sponsor side and how to talk to brands and make that all come together, especially concerned about appearing biased if he has ads for things in his articles. And I'm sorry that I might ruin the beautiful perfection that is Simon's blog without ads. I think he deserves to make money for the incredible work he's doing. So now he has the opportunity to potentially 10x plus his income, because I'm going to forward half my fucking sponsors to him, because that dude deserves to make money for the work that he's doing. So by writing about this thing that was exciting to him and making the connection because of this thing that was mutually exciting to us, I have an awesome new friend and connection in the industry and tons of opportunities from it. And he can meaningfully, massively increase his income for work he would have done anyways. That's awesome. We both inadvertently, without even thinking about each other, massively increase the likelihood that we both succeed. It's so cool. That's what we're talking about here. Speaking of which, this point from Kate's article seems like it's going in more in depth than exactly what I'm saying here. Give before you take. Another thing I've noticed about many people who've achieved outlier success, they're surrounded by people who they trust implicitly and who value loyalty and reciprocity. Essentially, their professional lives are one giant positive sum game where everyone's eager to do favors for one another. I work so hard to do this. I need every single person in my life to feel like I'm fighting for them and like they're getting more than they're giving. I work really hard for that. I am irreplaceable to some extent in the sense that like if you put someone else on my YouTube channel, it will make way less money. My team is also irreplaceable, but they don't make as much as I do because it's not theirs. And that's a huge imbalance. And I care a lot about that imbalance. So I go out of my way to make sure everyone around gets massive benefits whenever I possibly can give them to them, because they are choosing to spend this time working with me and building and doing with me. I like to think that I give a lot more than I take overall. There are always places where I'm fucking up and trying to learn and do better in, but it's so important to give more. And again, to go to my favorite example, hey Theo, T3 chat looks successful. Can I have a job, please? I need a computer. What the fuck have you given me? You're not looking for an opportunity. You're not looking to improve yourself. You're looking for a handout. Just ask me for $1,000. It's more transparent. I'm still going to block you for it, but like you're doing it so wrong. You need to build connections. Meanwhile, if you hit me up with something that solves a problem of mine, like the dev who hit me up with the extension for Zen, the hotkey to show and hide the UI for Excalidraw, the moment he DMs me that he is starting a company, I ask him how much money he needs and I write the check. Because he's not going to tell me he's raising money. He's going to tell me that he's doing a startup and would love my thoughts on what he's building. And my thoughts are, first, can I invest? Because he is practical, in the weeds, solving problems. And the first time I ever saw his name, ever, was when he showed up in my chat to link me something super useful between filming of videos. So good. And if you can be useful before you ask for things, you won't even have to ask because the person on the other side will notice that you could probably benefit from the thing and do it. The best position to be in is one where you don't have to ask for what you need. You give what you can, and then you are shown what you need and given it to you by the same people. Okay, you just broke my brain here, Dak. This is what I mean by I think when people say, don't meet your heroes, they're coming at their heroes with the wrong mindset. It's their fault, not their heroes, because people just go up and ask for shit. I've never thought about it this way, Dak, and you're entirely right, because I always say, meet your fucking heroes. I've met so many. I've met all of my heroes outside of like two or three in skateboarding that are still alive, and they've all been fucking awesome. So awesome. I wouldn't give that up for anything. But I didn't go to them asking for something. I went to them to thank them for something or give them something or help how I could with something. I met Tony Hawk a few times. He's fucking awesome. We're so lucky as skateboarding to have Tony as our figurehead, like the person who represents our sport, being as genuinely great and awesome as Tony Hawk is. Like, we're so lucky to not have a shithead leading skateboarding. But yeah, I hadn't thought of it this way. This is what people are probably doing wrong, because if they met their hero and went up and asked for something and didn't get it, they'd come back with a very different perspective than I do. That makes all the sense in the world. Thank you, Dak, for that. Here's another really good example. This is from Sahaj, who is one of the winners of the Clone-a-thon and also the creator of TweakCN, the set of themes for ShadCN, was one of the coolest, like, modern ShadCN Tailwindy things possible. Like, it's so useful to have a set of different styles and themes you can use for your ShadCN stuff. Great project. I'm bringing him up because he sent me one of the best DMs I've ever gotten. Obviously, he's already built a lot of context with me. I know who he is. I know how valuable his work is. We've had awesome conversations. And he hits me up with one of the best I need a job DMs I've ever gotten. I'm currently job hunting and figured I'd reach out after seeing you help a couple people on stream. Any guidance would be immensely helpful. Draws a really, really readable diagram, very much inspired by the way I do things, with the DevOps infra on one side, design on the other side, showing where his strengths are in building. Here's how I bucket my skills at the moment. I should mention I'm looking for remote opportunities, happy to provide more details as necessary. Four sentences, really, really good context, no brain power on my part. I already know who he is. I already know that he's good. Sends me this. I'm like, oh, this is so easy for me to refer for. I don't have to put any extra work in to figure out what you're good at, what you're bad at, what you're interested in, what you're not interested in, where you can work, where you can't work. And I liked it so much that I didn't even refer him to anybody. I literally just posted this. What are the most compelling? I'm looking for work DMs I've ever gotten. Diagram's incredible. Hire him. I'm confident he's good. That was on the 14th. And then on the 25th, so 11 days later, he joins V0 at Vercel. I didn't do this. This is not my doing. This is his doing. He so massively increased his surface area for luck that in 10 days, he went from needing a job to having a super cool job in one of the best possible places in the industry that'll give him connections that will last a lifetime. I didn't do that. He did that. His way of communicating with me massively increased the surface area for him to have this lucky thing happen. But that's his surface area and his lucky thing. I'm just a small part of that puzzle. But it's his fucking puzzle, and he owned it, and he won his success. Kate here said that she'd put herself in the category of partway there. While I don't have some huge high-trust mafia, I've built close professional ties over the last few years with some people I trust like family. I'd drop everything for them if they needed something, and I know they'd do the same for me. It's hard to overstate the value of having connections like this, and a crowded network of such connections will make you practically invincible. Kate, I'm going to hit you up after this. I would like to be part of that network for you because you are thinking about this in all of the right fucking ways, and I love what you're doing. There's only one way to start building this kind of network, which is to act with generosity towards others before you know whether it will be reciprocated. Generosity can be in a couple different forms, like attention, like you're responsive as hell in the conversation, you're a good person to talk to about the thing. It could be in the form of time, like you're going out of your way to meet them when it's convenient for them, not you, or helping them out with small tasks. Or it can be a resource, like buying them lunch. Air your weirdness. It's still underappreciated how powerful it is to put your thoughts on the internet. Yes, even now in 2025, when Substack is the hot social network, yeah, sharing your actual way of thinking about things can be really powerful. In an imaginary world where God dropped me into the life of someone who didn't have any professional connections, starting a blog is one of the first things I'd do. To be fair, I don't know how much success many can have with blogs. That said, here I am reading her blog, just glazing it endlessly. And if she didn't have endless opportunities in the field, I would be making sure she does. So she has a point there. Ignore me. She's right here, almost certainly. She's proving herself right by me reading this right now. As it is, my Substack has made it much easier to hire at Astera. I've been surprised at how many promising candidates come to us through it or mention it as a factor in why they took the job. My friend Ben Kuhn, who's also a blogger, has written about experiencing the same in his time at Wave. But of course, it makes sense. The best candidates are aligned with your values, and those are also the people who are going to enjoy your work the most. The writing doesn't have to be spectacularly original or particularly literate. It just has to genuinely reflect who you are and what you're interested in. This is such an important point. If your takeaway from this article is that you should go write about React, different JavaScript frameworks, even though you prefer backend dev stuff, you are learning the wrong things from here. If your takeaway is that you should be spamming somebody like Ryan Carniato, the creator of Solid.js, with all these things that you love about React, you're a little closer, but still pretty far off of what we're trying to say. If you're sharing the things you care about with someone else who cares about them, you're much more likely to find success from that. Like, here's an example of something that would go very well. If I make some comment in a video like this one that hits you a certain way, maybe you disagree with it, and then as you think about it more, you come around to it, or maybe you used to think this way and you change your mind over time, and you hit me up, hey Theo, you said this in this video. I thought about this so much that I ended up writing a blog post about it. Here's the thing I wrote about this one sentence you said. I'm curious what your thoughts are. I kind of have to read that. I don't like just reading random blog posts that get DM'd to me, but if it's clear that something I said inspired you enough to just go talk about this thing that you care about, I have to engage. It's no longer a choice. It's now a necessity. It's a thing I have to do because I also care enough about the thing to have talked about in a video in the first place. And if that's the approach you're taking, is the things that excite you enough that you want to talk about them, you want to write about them, you want to think about them, you want to spend your time and your mental cycles on these things, those are the right things for your time. Oh boy, here's the next fun point. Host events. One way to increase serendipity is to throw parties or events, especially a regular series of get-togethers that's low pressure to attend. This is not my thing at all, and I hesitate to suggest it because it's so far so not my thing. I'll like let people come through and chill and hang, and occasionally cool like connections happen inside of my apartment. But at the same time, I'm not the big events guy, and I also know that if you're in an area where you don't have a lot of these people around, you can't really do this at all. Like, this is very much an SF take, or maybe a college student take, where you're the place that devs come to hang out. If you can pull that off in college, if you can have the cool place people go to chill every Friday to talk about nerdy stuff or whatever, or you're the place that is like the meetup for homework help for different software dev classes, those are all awesome things. If you can be the point of contact and the place where these conversations happen, that'll be huge. That's kind of what I've done with my channel, is this is one of the places that these deep dives on random new technologies happen. And it's, you know, the joke of I'll wait for the Fireship video or I'll wait for the Theo video. That's because I became a place for the conversation. And now there are people who write their blog posts and their announcements around what it would look like for Theo to react to it. So on one hand, I don't think everyone needs to go host events. But on the other hand, I've seen this work for myself and others, even if I'm not trying to do it. And there's a whole friend group now in SF that's like the Theo Orbiter Circle, the people who I help move out here and their friends and the group that's formed around that. They have their own Discord servers I'm not in. They have their own events they do every Friday that I'm not invited to. They have their own world. And I know I could dive in and be part of it if I wanted to. But it's honestly cooler that that exists as its own thing that they made as a group. Because now that's one of the strongest networks in the city. And I've seen them bring people in who are like both way more successful and way less successful than the average person in the group and end up just melding in perfectly and helping everyone as a whole go up with it. It's so cool. As Kate says, these things can be extremely simple, like having acquaintances over for coffee at your place or on your stoop, or having a casual meeting at a pizza place. You can do this if you know 5 people in your city or 500. In my experience, lots of people want more social interaction, but few are willing to initiate events. So it's powerful to be the person who provides for the unmet need. That's a big thing. If others want a thing and you want the thing and you're the one to step up and do the thing, that will usually be really beneficial. Even if the thing fails, you still get the learning that you thought others would want this and it turns out they didn't. All huge wins. Even when you have an established network, it's a great way to densify the connections in your life. That's why I routinely will host get-togethers, even though I can get socially overloaded and frequently have to retreat to my room to recharge for a few minutes. Oh man, too real. Way too easy to relate. Unsure of what to host? At the risk of losing my edge, I'm going to let you in on a secret. Bagel brunch. My husband and I host them once a month, and they've become the cornerstone of our social life. You can feed dozens of people for cheap, it feels low stakes to everyone involved, and there's rarely any competition for people's time early in the day on weekends. All good points. Like, what are you doing at 11 a.m. on a weekend? Probably nothing. And now you're only going to network with people who actually wake up in time to do stuff like that, which is professional-wise very useful. But optimizing for the type of event you would be excited to go to is also useful because you want to surround yourself with the types of people that you want to work with. And a period of lostness is a big part. I think I'm going to love this section. The beginning of the process is going to feel artificial, like you're socially flailing and trying too hard. I can't tell you how awkward I felt when I was first joining Twitter Spaces about programming stuff. I was like, why am I here? Why do people care? And now millions of people listen to me every month. It's kind of crazy how quick that happened. And also, importantly, how quickly I just kind of got over it. Like, I just get put in front of a stage with 800 people and talk like there's nobody there. I don't even think about it anymore. It just doesn't faze me. But it had to start very differently. I had to feel awkward as hell initially. Because of all of this, you're going to be socially flailing and you'll be trying way too hard. Surely, you might think to yourself, everyone can tell that I don't belong here. Sending out a bunch of cold emails, scheduling random meetings, asking a lot of questions, the whole landscape will be obscure to you. Some people who claim to be important will turn out not to be. Some people without any public presence will turn out to be extremely influential behind the scenes. I can't tell you how many of these fucking people I've met over the last few years. You have no idea who's quietly, like, sitting in one of the back seats at some random event that secretly owns the fucking venue or has some of the craziest connections you've ever met. Like, I have met so many random quiet people in the back of a venue that came up to me because they liked my content that it turns out are friends of Sam Altman's. It's crazy. All of that said, don't schedule random meetings ever. Don't just send someone a calendar invite. Find something useful to talk about with them first over DMs. Then if it makes sense to do a meeting, you will realize that eventually. But don't ever start with the, like, can I get some of your time? Here's my calendar link. Fuck all of that shit. Don't ask for time. Ask something interesting, and then you'll get time for free. This is actually a common trope in the startup world. When you want to raise, ask for help. When you want help, ask for money. If your goal is to raise money for your company, don't go to VCs asking for money. Go to them asking for their thoughts and assistance in ways to help you plan what you're going to do, and they'll offer you money. I even said this before. If the guy who made my hotkey to turn this on and off hits me up for advice for his startup, I start by saying, can I give you money? If he hits me up asking for money, I'll probably still do it because he's impressed me in the past, but I'm going to immediately try and push towards, like, how can I help you? You get the opposite of what you ask for in certain situations. But if you just ask for the thing that is the most, like, simple and obvious, you might be surprised that the thing you actually want down the line is what you get instead. Like, if you hit me up asking a question about something I care a lot about in one of my videos with the goal of getting my attention, you're going to get my attention really fast with that. Or if you, like, want to get me into a meeting with you, don't ask me for a meeting. Ask me a question that's interesting enough that I feel like I need to hop on a call with you. And then something will start to change. You'll make a couple of key contacts who will introduce you to their favorite people. Some might refer to those key contacts as friends. You'll start to get a sense of who's respected, who's a drama factory, who could be counted on, and who's flaky. I can't tell you how quick this happens. It's stupid. Just, like, knowing these two people are going to like each other, trying to get them in the same room together, and now they, like, are inseparable. It's hilarious. Like, this happened last week. And it's so exciting to get to make those connections. Like, that's my favorite thing, is since I know all of these people, I convinced one of my friends from college that I, like, have been homies with for almost 10 plus years to move to SF recently, dropped him into this Theo Orbiter friend group, and now he's everyone's favorite person in the fucking group. Shout out to Vaughn, fucking legend. It's so cool that I get to bring these people together. It's the best feeling for me. And I'm not doing anything. I'm just putting two cool people in a room. Your goal should be to be one of those people. But in order to be one of the people that's cool in the room, you have to have things you care enough about to both be cool and to get in the room. As Kate says, you'll quickly get a sense of who's respected, who's a drama factory, who can be counted on, and who's flaky. It's also worth noting that your initial judgment of these people purely from the outside could be entirely wrong. A comment I still get a lot that I, at this point, I just find funny is, wow, I didn't expect you to be so thoughtful and caring with everything you do. I thought you were going to be a drama farmer because you were a YouTuber. For every drama you guys see me cover or talk about on Twitter, there are 10 or more that I quietly got to stop behind the scenes. Not ones that I was starting, ones that somebody hit me up because they thought I would cover it. And instead, I, like, get the people to make amends, and stop fucking going at each other's throats. I have prevented so much fucking drama because I don't like it. I don't enjoy drama. If it makes it to my channel, it's usually because I couldn't find another way to get the thing handled. But because it makes it to my channel at all, this assumption happens that I'm a drama factory. But if you ignore that assumption and have the conversation with people, you'll quickly learn that I'm not. But if you operate under assumptions you've made purely externally with no experience with these people at all, you're going to make mistakes. That said, everyone has assumptions about everything. Everyone has assumptions about literally fucking every single thing going on always. The key isn't to try and reduce the assumptions. Do it as much as you can. The key is to let your assumptions be corrected quickly when new information is discovered. An example here is you think Theo is just a drama farmer. And then you hear from some other person that you do like, Theo helped me a ton when I was in a tough spot. Maybe I was wrong about him. You need to be able to go through this loop. I'm using myself as an example here, not because I think you should pretend I'm not a drama farmer or whatever. I'm using myself as an example because I go through this a lot. And the best thing I've done for my reputation is nothing to do with how I present myself. It's that I've been around long enough that the people who I helped out are now successful in their own ways. And those people will defend the shit out of me. And that's not a bet I'm making. I'm just reaching out to these people because I think their shit's cool. I hit up Ben, my channel manager, because I genuinely liked his content and he seemed like he was burning out. I think he even tweeted that he was burning out. And I hit him up because I wanted to support him through the burnout phase. I hit up Mickey because he has an awesome energy with the content that he's creating that is kind of missing in the software dev YouTube space, and I wanted more of it. And I hit him up trying to figure out how I could encourage him to keep going down that path. And now he's blowing up on Twitter because he posted a video that I bullied him into posting there. I love those things. None of that's my doing. I didn't make these opportunities. I just hit up people who were doing stuff that I liked, and then they became more successful because the thing that I liked is applicable beyond me. And now they credit me for things that I don't deserve credit for, and they defend me for things I probably don't deserve defense for. And those people have saved my fucking reputation. Because even if you fucking hate my guts, every YouTuber you go to watch instead knows what I actually stand for, what I'm actually doing, and most of them will defend the shit out of me, even to their own detriment, and I have to tell them to stop. Hopefully you get the point I'm trying to make here. Like, don't let someone's public reputation keep you from making connections that could be useful. Another fun one here, somebody actually brought this up, the WordPress drama. I have been trying so hard to get Matt Mullenweg to ramp down this drama. He's finally starting to. I'm hyped that this seems to be settling a bit. It's not my doing at all. I'm just trying to get this guy to calm down. But through that, he's actually grown to like me quite a bit. I got invited to his birthday party, and I made some connections here. Ready for a crazy loop? Me going to the WordPress creator's birthday party resulted in me meeting Joshua, the creator of Delicious, who I was talking about earlier. See how all of these things feed into each other? The amount of crazy connections that happen from the weirdest fucking places. Just by being there, being accessible, being real, and talking about the things you actually give a shit about, it's unbelievable. There is no growth hack that is more powerful than talking about the shit you care about with others who also care about the thing. That will always lead you to success faster than anything else, and anyone trying to say otherwise is trying to sell you some shit. And honestly, this author is one of the first people I found that is telling this like it is, and is also trying to sell you some shit. A really cheap book that I will be buying immediately. I'm signing up for the notifications for it now, and you should too. Link for all of this is in the description. I'm not joking. I just signed up because I'm buying this fucking book. Oh, speaking of which, we're on the last paragraph. Really good timing. So this is right after the bit about who's good and who's bad, the drama factory, all that. And then what? I could give you an after picture of what the life of a well-connected person looks like. There are many enticing possible descriptions. But the magic of the whole process is that I have no idea what form your luck will take. Why is this so good? This is a point I should have made. Your success shouldn't look like mine. I am me and you're you. If you learn the right lessons from this, you will go and talk a lot more about the things you care about and spend more time with those and others who also care about them. That's the lesson to learn. The result will be something entirely different that you're really excited about yourself. Kate says here that I can't predict what might happen any more than she could have predicted that she'd end up here after emerging from rehab 4.5 years ago with little more than curiosity and desperation. Her imagination couldn't have conceived how rich her life could get. She really started making her own luck. The same is likely true of you. What a good read. This one hit deeper. It's been a while since I felt something like this after reading a post like this. Thank you so much, Kate, for writing this. I hope that I'm doing a good enough job promoting you, your work, and your book. This was an incredible article, and I think you changed some lives by writing this. I'd be surprised if you didn't. I'd be really surprised if just the process of writing this doesn't result in the trajectory of a handful of people's lives being changed in a way that actually impacts the whole world. Thank you for writing this and giving me the opportunity to rant about these things. I appreciate you immensely. Give her a follow. Buy her fucking book. I'm so excited about what she's doing. Thank you all, as always, for taking the time. I hope you get to increase your luck a bit after watching this, and maybe this video is part of that luck surface that you're building in the first place. Let me know how y'all feel. Until next time, stay lucky.